or white ways of me. And
you need at least
9 or 5 the construction contractors board, landscape contractors board, budget.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5036 is the budget bill for the Construction Contractors Board and Landscape Contractors Board. Contractor registration fees support these boards. The Construction Contractors Board portion, the budget is 5.65% above the current service level, but is reduced $2.1 million in 4.27 FTE from the governor's budget. The budget includes adjustments for workload and substantive legislation. There are several budget notes that deal with classification and compensation issues, technology improvements, and workload management. The budget provides funding for an interim construction fraud unit to replace funding for the Oregon State Police criminal construction fraud unit. The unit is under the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice and includes an attorney, a state police officer, and clerical and board investigator support. It will assess the incidence of illegal activity, compile data, and recommend statutory changes to the next legislature. It will also provide assistance to board investigators and local law enforcement and will prosecute a limited number of cases. A budget note directs the board, the Oregon State Police, and Department of Justice to work together on the evaluation and report to the emergency board semi-annually. The subcommittee recommends a budget of $10,256,924.69.98 FTE for the construction contractors board. Landscape contractors board. The budget is increased 8.2% from the current service level, but is reduced $21,210 from the governor's recommended budget. Budget includes adjustments for workload and substantive legislation. Landscape contractors board has no staff and contract with the Construction Contractors Board for operations. Adjustments to the budget of the Construction Contractors Board affect the contractual operating costs of this board. $18,126 was added to the board chair of program office of the Construction Contractors Board. The budget also includes funding for workload and technology. The subcommittee recommends a budget of $428,210 for landscape contractors board.
Thank you, Representative Westland. Are there any questions for Representative Westland on House Bill 5036? Okay, hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 5036? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5036 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we will go now to House Bill 5054, Senator Hannon.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair and members, House Bill 5054 is the bill authorizing new fees and fee increases established during the 97-99 interim period. These fees were approved by the Department of Administrative Services during the interim, and if these fees or fee increases are not increased, they revert back to their prior level on July 1st unless we authorize it. The fees for ODOT were adopted through the Administrative Procedures Act, and they include airport heliport site inspection, $300, administrative fee for evaluation private tollway proposal, $5,000 for initial review, $40,000 for detailed evaluation, parking permit fees for winter recreation areas, annual permit $10, a three-day permit $350, and a one-day permit $2. And then the driver motor vehicle records list count set up for DUI and diversion list and hearing tape. Statute requires that motor vehicles establish fees for these programs by administrative rule. That's what these fees are included in. They were recommended by your Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development, and we encourage them to pass now.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Hannon on House Bill 5054? Hearing and seeing none. Are there any objections to the passage of House Bill 5054? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5054 is passed the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Schrader will carry on the House side, and Senator Hannon will carry on the House. And we will move now to Senate Bill 5522. Senator Hannon, budget for Public Utility Commission.
Madam Co-Chair and members, Senate Bill 5522 is the budget bill for the PUC. The commission is responsible for regulating electronic and natural gas companies as well as certain telephone and water utilities. The commission also operates the Residential Service Protection Fund, which provides telecommunication services for disabled and low-income individuals. The commission's budget is supported 99% by other funds, 1% federal funds. The Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development recommends a budget of $29,384,061. This is a 2.1% decrease from the Governor's recommended budget. The Subcommittee approved increases for position reclassifications, Attorney General services, and professional services for the utility asset auctioning process. The subcommittee reduced the budget by $677,199 in the Residential Service Protection Fund based upon reduced contract costs for the telecommunications relay service. The subcommittee requested the Department of Administrative Services unschedule $1.8 million in expenditure limitations pending passage of certain legislation or concurrence of other contingencies. This money was set aside specifically to deal with pending litigation in the PUC, and it was felt by the subcommittee that because of the past history of the PUC indicated that it was possible we needed to have some legislative oversight. So this $1.8 million was reserved in the E-Board for the PUC, and then they're supposed to come back with a plan and show us exactly what they need and why, rather than just going out instigating lawsuits and then coming back with a bill from the Attorney General's office and saying, now we owe this much money. So that's what this was designed for. Now, the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends approval of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions for Senator Hannon on Senate Bill 5522? Senator Lewis first, Senator Hannon.
Madam Co-Chair, I just want to call the committee's attention to a budget note in this budget asking that they report on the residential excess program because the cost per minute, the rate has increased more than 40 to 50% this biennium. And the whole program's cost has increased within the last 10 years 300%. And we ask them to look into ways to improve efficiency and ways to reduce costs and report back to E-Board next spring and again next November in case there's any statutory changes that might be necessary. So surcharge is a charge that the users have no control over whether they are efficient or try to reduce costs. They have no control over the surcharge. So that's the reason we really want them to improve efficiency and contain costs.
Very good, Senator.
I just wondered if the carrier would talk about budget notes. I'm glad, Senator, you brought up one of them. I wondered about the other two. There's some new words in the one at the bottom, intralata, interlata, all of those things. I've not heard before.
Madam Chair, those are definitions used in defining the operation in telephone areas. LATA, there's 541 LATA, there's 503, and soon to become 971 or something. So this was budget notes directing the staff to report back to us so we can kind of have some idea. Particularly, what we'd really like to do is have the Information Management Committee of the legislature be brought into the discussions on this.
Particular one. Close involvement. How about the other budget note, the one that the court cases, that's just to get a handle on the cost of the
address.
We're trying to tell them they shouldn't go to court.
No. The budget in no way attempts to tell the PUC that they cannot form litigation. The budget note is intended to give us a handle on the continuing escalation of Attorney General's costs. And that was the sole reason for that budget note.
Good enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The extended area service was put in partially at my request, but budget note. That affects both urban and rural. The timing that it takes to get the additional calling distances between areas taken care of when both communities may be very much in favor of it can extend out for many, many years before it is actually done. And we were unable to come up with a single state that takes anywhere near as long as what we take in the state of Oregon. Just to streamline the rules, take a look at the rules for examination and streamlining them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are there further questions for Senator Hannon on Senate Bill 5522? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the passage of Senate Bill 5522?
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Just one comment. This has been one of the most frustrating budgets to deal with because some of the actions by one of the commissioners. We read public statements that he was wearing a target on his back and the agency was under tighter scrutiny than any other agency. And I would say that to the PUC that they have not been scrutinized any more than anybody else. But I resent having to read every morning in the paper blow-by-blow discounts that were attributed to the PUC when I was in the meeting and sharing it, and I don't even recall some of those occurrences happening. So fantasy land is alive and well at the PUC, and I would like to state that for the record, that this has been the most frustrating budget process in this one agency that I've ever had the privilege of having.
Thank you, sir. And I think that's probably why it's coming to me so late, because it's frustrating agencies to work with. Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 5522? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5522 is passed to the floor with a D-CAS recommendation. We will now move to Senate Bill 611. Relating to direct entry midwifery, Representative Davis, and Representative
Hopps. Senate Bill 611 comes to you with unanimous support from the Human Resources Subcommittee. In 1993, the legislature established the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. The purpose of the board is to provide voluntary licensing and to set standards. It also placed in the bill a sunset clause of June 30, 1999. Senate Bill 611 takes several steps to continue the board's licensing efforts. It extends the sunset to December 31st, 2001, allows the board to accept and extend donations, contributions, and grant funds, increases the initial and annual renewal license fee from $500 to $2,000 per year, includes other fund expenditure limitations of as appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Subcommittee questioned board members and licensees extensively about the substantial fee increase. In order for a midwife to be eligible for payment by an insurer, they must be licensed by the board. The licensees volunteered to pay the higher license fees to keep the board solvent. Plus, they are making an effort to increase the number of licensees to support the board's operation. Even the Oregon Midwifery Council has committed a monetary contribution to the board's operating fund. The midwives are very determined to maintain the board. Subcommittee outlined several operational safeguards. In case the revenue is not adequate to support the expenditures, the board will report their financial status to the emergency board prior to March 2000. The wait means Human Resources Subcommittee urges your support of Senate Bill 611.
Thank you, Representative Ross. Are there any questions from Senator Fisher?
Comment, Madam Chair. I would like to echo what Representative Ross has said, and just note that there are several of those midwives right here in the audience this morning. They've turned out in force to support efforts to continue their board, and I really appreciate their efforts, and I feel that we need to support them in this, give them every chance they can to work themselves out of this particular little financial hole. It's not been entirely all their making.
And I would just add that I think that they are very conscientious in wanting to set standards and make sure that we have high standards for this activity to ensure the safety of mothers and infants. And I think this is very responsible action on their part.
Thank you, Representative Ross. So they're
I'm unfamiliar with this particular group, so is there a school that they go to get their degree in midwifery?
They have internships, and they have to participate in a certain number of deliveries, and then they take a test, and so they're, I'm not familiar with all the exact things that go into their into their training, but they feel it's really important to have the license so there are standards and so it isn't just a craft that is practiced out here by loose veterinarians.
There you go. Thank you. I assume, and I read here that there's 30 members so far. And out of that 30, how many actually came and testified that they were interested in the 500?
We had about 27
or 28
in the room. They did come in a box, I think. Not only did they come for the hearing in the Human Resources Committee in Mass, but they also came to the subcommittee hearing again in Mass. And as I say, this is not their financial situation, not entirely due to their making, and this bill is extremely important to them because it allows them to go out and get the grants or the donations and gifts to help support their cause, and they have some already to go and just need the okay. So the quicker we get this through, the better for them.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any further questions or comments on Senate Bill 611? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 611? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 611 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Move now to Senate Bill 919. Senator Fisher, this is relating to community-based services for persons with developmental disabilities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 919 requires the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division to create a plan that addresses services for developmentally disabled persons and their families. The goal is to develop a plan that is more accessible, more effective, and more equitable. The 1995-97 legislature approved a long-range plan for developmental disability services based on operating savings from the closure of every training plan. This is providing support services to more developmentally disabled persons, but we never expect to fully serve all persons who need or want services. This bill takes the next step in planning for these services. The agency is required to review its eligibility requirements, how services are accessed, what services are needed, and how services can be adjusted as needs change. The bill also requires an analysis of the budgetary and programmatic effects of providing services to all eligible persons and their families. The plan is to be presented to an interim legislative committee by February 1. The agency will use existing resources to complete the initial plan. The Human Resources Subcommittee recommends approval of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. Are there any questions for Senator Fisher? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on the passage of Senate Bill 919? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 919 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Representative Loken will carry on the House side, and Senator Shields will carry on the Senate side. And we will go now to Senate Bill 1216. Senator Yee, relating to all-terrain vehicles.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 1216A transfers the all-terrain vehicle program
from the Oregon Department of Transportation to the Parks and Recreation Department. The House Committee on Transportation referred this measure to Ways and Means. The measure has a fiscal impact for program administration for permit issuance and grants for ATV programs. The committee amended the bill, deleting the emergency clause and making the effective of the program date to January 1, year 2000, to provide a reasonable transition time frame to transfer the program from ODOT to the Parks Department. In addition, the committee amended the bill to decrease ODOT's expenditure limitation by $3,610,669 and 0.95 FTE and increase the Parks expenditure limitation by $3,853,213 and 2.76 FTE. The committee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions?
Okay, Mr. Measley. Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, would the Parks Department contract this out with the dealers, the licensing? And
I would imagine they do. This way they would allow the permits to be issued in the evenings and weekends. But I would like staff to confirm this.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. That is my understanding, that they would also be using dealers to issue the permit.
Is this exactly the same program, or just transferring the exact same functions from one agency to another?
Yes.
Second question, Madam Chair. Well, why is it costing $250,000 more to do that then?
I'm
misreading.
$250,000. That was part of the administrative cost that ODOT was compensating for, and by moving it over to Parks, there was that additional cost that ODOT had not been absorbing. So that's the difference in the money that you see there. Basically, it's a fund that moved in its entirety over to the Parks. But ODOT really wanted to get rid of the functions because it was very time-consuming and it ate up a lot of administrative time.
Just a comment. We've seen a number of situations like this. I think there was a central hearings panel went through here and others that, you know, we purport to transfer things and make it more efficient and hopefully get better results, but in the end it costs us more money. And, you know, I would say that ODOT's administration should be reduced a little bit by $250,000 if we're truly transferring this to a different agency and they're doing exactly the same function. I guess if I was state government, what I would do is I would slowly transfer one thing between departments and slowly increase our budget, and eventually I'm sure it'll go back around to them. So I have some concerns. I have no problem with moving it from one agency to another, but I'll probably be a no on this just because of the fiscal statement here, and I guess I don't like a little show game the agency sometimes plays with.
Madam Chair, if the good representative will be at committee at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, we have ODOT's budget, and I would certainly entertain a worthy motion from you to make such reduction.
I'll ride my horse calls all the way down here and take care of that.
Okay.
Sure. I see ODOT really wants to shift this program. Is the Parks Division willing to assume it and we have to please do it?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's pleased about the program.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since my good friend and colleague from Canby has committed to be at the 9 o'clock transportation sub tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to save the hardworking taxpayers of the state of Oregon $250,000, I assume you will be able to make my public safety wagering subcommittee at 1 so we can save them $7 million. I will say this, that if I'm at that meeting at 9 in the morning, I'll guarantee I'll be at the 1, but I'm not so sure I'll be it either, but I'll certainly try.
The same. We cannot do without you.
All right.
Okay. Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, it's kind of interesting. It seems like we don't want to dismantle ODOT, but they've got something that they can do that supposedly is costing them a little money or something. It's very easy to transfer. And I just like that on the record.
Okay. Okay. Are there any further questions or comments on Senate Bill 1215?
Yes, Chair. Well, no, I'm not
going to
be able to
represent
the
Senator
or
Regional. Okay, good. I think everybody brought up good questions and comments. Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 1215? No votes?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Senate Bill 1216, having received required majority, was passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We now move to Senate Bill 1275, relating to taxation. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. In Oregon, corporations pay tax on their net income. A formula which is called the apportionment formula is utilized wherein it taxes property and payroll and sales as factors in the apportionment formula itself. Since 1991, the sales factor has been double-weighted. That is, we pay twice as much based upon sales within the state as we do in any other of these two factors. And in Senate Bill 1275, as being grows, the changes to the income formula for corporate income taxpayers is gradually changed by increasing the weight of the sales factor and reducing the weight of the payroll and property tax factors, where we collect payroll taxes and property taxes on these businesses which are doing business in the state of Oregon. The sales factor is increased from 50%, which it is today, to 80% over a three-year period beginning 2001 corporate year. The payroll and property tax factors are reduced from their current weighting of 25% each down to 10% each over this same three-year period. Now, the movement of the increased sales factor impacts most heavily upon corporations which have limited or no production activity in Oregon, but they have a marketing presence and a marketing activity here. The reducing of the weight on property and payroll factors and more towards the, and more on sales factor would favor corporations that are generating economic business within Oregon and selling their product abroad. Furthermore, this, we feel like, will stimulate increased business within the state of Oregon, stimulate sales overseas for export-based manufacturing within the state of Oregon. Revenue impact statement you have before you in this file is a projection based upon the past 10 years, and it uses static modeling. We've done some rather unique things with the static versus dynamic modeling, and when you take into consideration the positive impact on state revenue resulting from the economic development and increased business activities, increased personal income taxes collected and increased property taxes collected from businesses which would be willing to locate here to service the Pacific Rim, you feel like this is a important direction to move. Many states are moving this direction, and the General Government Subcommittee recommends passing 1275.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Are there any questions for Representative
Butler? Does the carrier know what the fiscal impact would be for 2003 and
2005? Senator Crowe, the straight, I think we have the fiscal impact. It just carries it out year by year.
Well over $100 million.
Yes, it goes through. It was estimated to go over $102 million in the static model.
Okay, right. Madam Chair, I'm going to be a no on this. In part, it's because of the fiscal impact. In part, it's because it seems to me that the static model is all the model we have, and it does show a rather dramatic fiscal impact. And we have been doing pretty good things for corporations and people who have invested in corporations already. We've done capital gains tax cut. We've gone through the Senate. I don't know if it's gone through the House yet or not. We've sending kicker monies back. Now, they don't get any kicker monies this time, but they certainly have gotten kicker monies the last couple times. Corporate income tax is about average throughout the country. And the dynamic model, which we don't have, but we just talk about, does show the possibility of this getting us some more income in the future, but that's all theoretical. We don't have a model in place that doesn't show that. The only model we have is the static model, and it shows a substantial fiscal impact beginning this biennium and continuing into the next five. So I'll be a no for those reasons.
Senator Trump, are there any further questions or comments on Senate Bill 1275?
I guess I'd like to make a comment. It is difficult when we try to model what impacts are going to be, but as a business owner myself, if you reduce tax burden on business, business will, in fact, reinvest those dollars into their plants, their equipment. Usually means hiring people. A lot of times it goes into research and development.
Mm.
But all of those investments grow that business and make that business stronger and will ultimately, I believe, lead to higher revenues for that business, which will cause them to pay more taxes and the dollars that they give to their employees. If they hire more people, of course, will be returned to us in the personal income taxes. So it is difficult to model these things, but I do believe it is important to move ahead with Senate Bill 1275.
And just one final comment. Thank you, Mayor Klicker. Just one final comment. We need to recognize that of the $8 billion that is collected in income taxes in the state, a very, very small portion of that, something around which approximates $300 million is corporate income tax. The balance is based upon the jobs that people have that work for these corporations. And so the feeling is that if you look at the dynamic model and anticipate what it might be, and I appreciate, and Senator Coe did vote no in the subcommittee, and I appreciate his comments here today, that we feel like that this could bring back to the local communities in the forms of property tax increases a much greater benefit as well.
I guess I'm just all with the idea that we have to just treat our business community basically as using it as a old fable of the goose that lays the golden egg. In my business practices, if I practice the same practice on my clients, the government practices on its clients, I'd go out of business overnight. I've never found one single time when I try to work more and give more of myself or share more of my business with my employees, it turned around and bit me. It always makes my business better and brings people in. And I frankly think that the care is a whole lot better than the stick. And I really support efforts like this to allow people to go out and do things on their own without having to have government always constantly dictating the terms and this kind of thing. So if we can release things, make it a little easier on business will hire more people. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, a proven factor. And if we could ever get that through our heads, people don't mind paying taxes, which they're making them up.
Okay, are there any further questions or comments on Senate Bill 1275? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 1275? I have Senator Trow, Representative Ross. Any further no votes? Senate Bill 1275, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a detached recommendation. Representative Butler will carry in the House. We will now move to Senate Bill 1296, relating to remote-controlled water ski boats.
Senate Bill 1296 allows remote-controlled water ski boats to be operated in waters of the state. The measure also allows the water skier to control the boat. The Senate Committee on Transportation referred this measure to Ways and Means, and the committee discussed the fiscal impact of the measure, noting that the estimated cost provided by the department might be excessive, and that the Legislative Fiscal Office believes implementation costs could be somewhat less. The committee considered the request for use of general funds and agreed that the agency's other fund resources are the appropriate source of the funds, and that there is sufficient ending balance to cover any costs that might be incurred as a result of the passing of this measure, and the committee recommends approval.
Senator Keetub, are there any questions for Senator Keetub on Senate Bill 1296?
I have a question for Senator. Is this only designated for certain bodies of water, or is it
cover the whole state?
Well, actually, the Marine Board said that they would probably make some designations of zones for these remote-operated ski boats. Mm-hmm. So that will be up to the board. And these boats operate in fairly smooth waters, and so there will be some that would not, some bodies of water that wouldn't be conducive.
Very important. I'm trying to be a no vote on this. The bodies of water that I'm familiar with, I think, would be extremely unsafe. And we have problems with jet skis and these kind of watercrafts at this time. And I think this would just add to the hazards of these boats on the water.
Madam Co-Chair, I was a no vote committee. I'll just be a no vote here for some of the same reasons Representative Messley stated. I'm concerned with people being able to ski and also being aware of what else is going on around them for observation purposes. We have observation laws in Oregon. I think they're good laws. And that's why I'm going to not be there. There was some testimony about these would only be used on flat water surfaces where they could be able to see. But as someone who water skis, you sometimes get very intensely focused on what you're doing on a lake or river or whatever, and don't tend to pay a lot of attention to what's going on behind you. It's good to have an observer.
Manager. I would say for the benefit of the committees that we heard quite a bit of testimony from the manufacturer of these devices, and there is remote control in the handles of the water ski. So that if the skier goes down for whatever reason, lets go, the device stops and there's an orange flag that rises above to let other boaters know that a person is down in the water. And I think that, in fact, the safety regards have been put in place. It's a new device. It's a new technique. And it's certainly something that has not been used before. Mm-hmm. However, it's been approved in several other states, and the other states have looked favorably upon it. So Oregon has a unique boating law system that requires an observer to be looking at the skier constantly. That sometimes happens and it sometimes doesn't happen. So I think this is a device that's worthy of exploring. I would also point out to committee members that the fiscal impact will not occur until the next item because they're still setting up marketing processes to market the product. It's not on the market here in Oregon yet. So the fiscal impact actually appears in the next item. And I would urge that we approve this and allow the new procedure and a new idea and a new way to move ahead.
Mr. Carey, you have a question. It looks like a lot of fun. It'd be something I think one would like to do if you felt confident in managing the thing. But my question is there some way of stopping the device in case the person out there who has his hands on the gear loses control of himself, is no longer able to stop it? How does it stop itself? Does it just turn off? Is that all it does? Or is there some kind of a braking system in the water that allows it to stop fairly quickly? Because otherwise it's going to have some momentum and it's likely to run into somebody.
I'd like to mm-hmm. and then you can follow up. There are a couple of ways it stops.
Uh-huh.
Remote by the skier stops.
Right, I know that.
That automatically stops it. Also,
now does it automatically stop? Just turn it off. Does it stop it?
It turns it off.
Just turns it off. So it goes on by its own momentum until it runs out of something.
No, I don't know. How many?
It can't just stop unless there's some way it stops because it has some momentum that's built up.
Well, there are several things, as the senator started to say. Now, you can let go of the rope and it'll shut off immediately. And it also sounds an audible alarm to let people know that there's a boat or a person down. So it also does that.
But what it does, Senator, is it's like using your lawnmower. You have a bar on your lawnmower handle, and the second you let go, the motor shuts down. That's the same way with this, same principle. Just cuts it off and sounds the alarm and the flag goes up.
The lawn presents quite a lot of resistance to it, so it probably wouldn't go very far. The water doesn't. It could go quite a ways.
I disagree. The water does provide resistance. And the other thing is that with regard to the waves that might be in the water, if the water is too choppy, actually the engine won't run in water that's too choppy either. So that is a factor, and we heard testimony that basically it will be fairly skilled water skiers that are using the boat.
How can you guarantee that?
I will recognize Senator Fisher in a moment. I would remind the committee we are a fiscal committee. We are not a policy committee, and I believe the bill did come to us from a policy committee. So just kind of keep that in mind, Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, anybody that's operated a boat at any time at all knows that the minute you shut the saddle up on a boat, it stops. Right now, aircraft landing on water stops 10 times faster or more than it stops on grass. Not much resistance at all in comparison, unless it's 5 feet tall. And from that standpoint, a boat like this, obviously, it's ridiculous to think that you could stop anything going that fast unless you ran into a rock wall in 2 feet. But probably at 35 miles an hour, something like that, wouldn't go 30 feet beyond. 40 feet beyond where it's at because of the drag of the water, and it stops it much faster than a normal boat would stop because it's not nearly as I don't know how water dynamics
is to do.
I just remind people on the committee that this is operating in other states. I don't think that there's been any excessive safety problems, and we're just allowing this individual to begin to market these boats in this state. People who use them would be right if they would be right.
Might I just say?
No. That was. That was.
They look alike.
Yeah. There is
the younger, better looking version.
This is what.
Everybody loves.
When you have five children, you get these gray hairs.
Well, Patrick will look like that in a few years.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to say that there was testimony in committee that indicated that several million dollars in sales that would be generated fairly rapidly in the state of Oregon on these watercraft. And the bill that we passed a few moments ago, 1275, would be passed, has the same issue, and that is if they have no physical presence in the state of Oregon, the sales factor is 80%, and the income tax factor on that corporation doing business out of the state of Washington will pay tax in the state of Oregon even though they have no physical presence.
Very good, Representative. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Okay, are there any, I have two no votes, I know for sure, on Senate Bill 1296.
I'm a no vote.
I think we better do a roll call on this.
Representative Ross?
No.
Representative Westland?
Aye.
Representative Netherly's a no. Representative Schrader?
Yes.
Butler?
Aye.
Representative Menner?
Aye.
Patrick?
No.
Chair Lewis?
Aye.
Senator Tutem?
Aye.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Senator Yee?
No.
Senator Turow?
No.
Senator Bryant?
No.
Senator Farioli?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator McPherson?
I'm right over you.
Six no votes.
Okay. I have ten yes. Coach, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Senate Bill 1296, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a new pass recommendation. We'll move to Senate Bill 1331. Senator Hammond.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair and members, Senate Bill 1331 does two things. Originally, there was a Senate bill that started out setting forth some procedures to move toward full parity on mental health. Majority Leader from Salem and myself worked together to identify a compromise that we could both get on board and support. What Senate Bill 1331 does is it increases by 25% the statutory limits for mental health and chemical dependency treatment covered by group health benefits. The benefit increases become effective with insurance policies issued or renewed on or after July 1st, 2000. These fees have not been increased since 1987 when they were amended in the statute, and for the last 12 years have not had any fee increase at all. Secondly, Senate Bill 1331 creates an interim task force to study fiscal, social, and services relating to mental health parity. The task force will be staffed by positions contained in the Legislative Administration Committee budget for interim legislative activities. No new positions or additional services and supply expenditures are anticipated. The task force responsibilities are expected to become part of the work plan for the Interim Legislative Committee on Human Resources. Madam Chair and members, I think this goes a long way to trying to improve the ability of people having access to mental health and drug and alcohol dependency. And I would certainly urge the passage of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions of Senator Hannon on Bill 1331? Senator Ellis.
Just, Madam Chair, to commend the good senators for his efforts to bring this issue forward. And I think without his personal involvement, we wouldn't be seeing this progress.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate Senator Hannon's concerns, but I was a no vote in the committee, and I wanted to explain why. Health benefits for mental health is increased by 25%, and I'm concerned that costs for insurance will increase, and this makes it less affordable for people who wanted to have health insurance. And also, the task force required is going to look at the extent of mental health benefits that are not met. So I think that we should increase the benefits after the study instead of do it now, because there is no documented evidence that this benefit has increased. So after the study, we can understand more about what is the extent of benefit that has to increase. And the third reason is that this may be a mandated cost for state governments, local governments, and private insurers. And I think that we don't want any unfunded mandates to our state and local governments. I asked for the information regarding the cost increase, but I have not received it yet. But I think basically Oregon has done very well in lowering the uninsured people in the state. I think that we have reduced it from 18% to 11% now. It's because we have been resisting mandated increase and try to keep costs low. But I'm afraid this will increase costs and make it less affordable for people who want to be insured. And that's the reason I voted no. And I sure would like to get those information regarding costs to government, and I have not received them yet.
I would echo the same comments as my colleagues from Lynn and Benton Linton. I
going to declare a potential conflict of interest in this. Again, at this very time, we're bargaining for new insurance for our employees, and the costs are going up without all these artificial raises. And it's becoming harder and harder to afford insurance, it's really meaningful, to our employers. And as was mentioned, we have not had a study. We've been making preparation for a very, very thorough study of this entire subject. So I'm going to get an over to do that.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions?
Echo the comments a little bit that have already been stated. I appreciate the Senator's good work on this bill. I mean, and very sympathetic for those that have true psychiatric disorders and should be treated exactly the same as those that have other physical ailments. But I have some concerns because current law doesn't have a definition of mental health disorder. And stress, I see an increase in our society of people filing claims on just stress-related disorders and you know, being a policeman, stressful, well, sure. Well, being a veterinarian, stressful, sure. So I hope I can take advantage of this program in the near future. But I believe a little bit in personal responsibility, you know, life stuff. I also think there's a big difference between those chemical dependency types of disorders and those that have legitimate psychiatric disorders. It's just a personal belief of my own. The way the bill is written, current law is written, every 24 months, a drug addict would come back in and get treatment at taxpayer expense, and or expense to the premiums of all the rest of us, particularly employers that are paying for health care for our employees. So I see that the study that was done, I think the assumptions that they used are incorrect. I think that what will happen is physicians will see this as a license to prescribe more and more treatment, people will take more and more advantage of it, the cost will be considerable, much more than has been indicated in the preliminary study. So while I'm very sympathetic, I would be more for this if we can narrow the scope to those psychiatric disorders that I think we all are more familiar with rather than such a broad stroke. And as a result of that, I'm going to probably be a no vote on this.
I also thank Senator we're not on the floor for bringing this forward, because I do think there is a real need for help for those with diagnosed psychiatric disorders and that need medication and a number of other things, and so it is very needed. I'm glad to see that there is a study in this bill. I wish the study were before actually making the change. Because we might find some things in that study where we might want to change the numbers just a little bit. And I'm concerned that a little bit with this, because what we want to do is try to insure as many people as we can. And I'm afraid that when we don't do the study and look at it carefully, we might be bringing somebody into the category that isn't quite as necessary, and eliminating some others just because they can't afford the coverage. But I was a yes vote in committee, and I'll continue to be a yes vote. I look forward to the study and hope that we can define it a little bit more closely, because I do have some of the same concerns that Representative Schrader voiced about the chemical dependency and some stress-related problems that I
I
had a little bit of personal responsibility of that.
Madam Chair. This is a real tough vote for me. I've voted against all mandates for insurance since I've been here in my 16 years, and I've seen insurance for my employees double because of the stress factor we put in the years ago and the others. I've watched Senator Hannon in regards to this issue. He sells insurance. He had to go through the process that we're talking about. And as you look at this, historically, we've moved more to a mental health, when we look at mental health side of the process, it's getting more involved than it's ever been. When I first came here, you didn't hear much about mental health and all that. Now you hear about it every day. So it is a problem.
and needs to be addressed. This is a 1% addition in the process, so I don't think it's overly dramatic. I would certainly be watching if I were you legislators for the future, but I'm going to be voting for it, and it's a tough vote for me.
Madam Chair, we hear frequently about the issues of youth suicide and the dislocated workers. We have chemical dependency problems in rural communities, so we've seen the very difficult transitions from natural resource-based economies to unemployment, because we haven't diversified anything else yet. And I believe that this is a very necessary step in the right direction. We hear about the problems, we describe the problems. This is an opportunity for us to look at potential solutions for those folks that have psychiatric issues and chemical dependency issues. And I guess I will take exception with comments that chemical dependency might not be a legitimate psychiatric ailment, but it certainly is, and it needs attention. This is still a way to give us some of that needed attention. I will be a yes.
I will be a yes on this issue. One of the things that really impressed me in the mental health forum that Senator Q-Sub organized for us early this year is how much we have made progress in the medical treatment of mental illness. And that just in the last 5-7 years, we've made tremendous progress in being able to treat depression and schizophrenia with medication so those people can, in fact, lead a really normal life. And it is so important, I think, that we make those medications available to people so they can, in fact, return to an ordinary life. And I think a lot of us who haven't been close to mental health really don't realize the tremendous changes that have been made in just great medical treatment of these conditions and the fact that these medications need to be made available. And so I'm very supportive of this effort.
That's very right. Are there further questions or comments on Senate Bill 1331?
I'm sure. I'd like to close if I can.
Well, I was going to make a comment now.
All right.
This is a difficult issue for me, too. I don't like to see mandates on health insurance policies because it does raise the premiums and it does make it hard for small businesses such as myself to continue my own business and other small businesses to be able to continue to offer health insurance to their employees. However, I really believe that mental illness, those folks do deserve treatment for their illnesses just as much as people who have other kinds of illnesses. And many of the issues surrounding chemical dependency, oftentimes people who suffer from mental illness use chemicals because they are not being treated properly, haven't gotten into treatment, and they might tend to use drugs or alcohol. So there is a connection there between those dependencies and problems such as schizophrenia. And so I am very sympathetic to the people that need treatment. I am very glad to see the study in here. I think it's a long time coming. We do truly need to study this issue. And I will vote for this today. I may reserve the right to vote no on the floor, but I will vote for this today in committee.
Madam Chair,
please
I want to take this opportunity to thank all the committee members, both that are going to vote yes and those that are going to vote no, because I think this needed a thorough discussion. As most of you know, I came here this session after having gone through recovery myself, and it's taught me a greater appreciation that it doesn't respect whether you're Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. There's people who need help. And my efforts behind this bill is designed to do one thing, and that's help one person. If I'm able to help one person, it will be worth the effort of this bill. This means a lot
to me personally, not to get accolades or boos or anything else, but to say we may not have always agreed with him, but he really gives a damn about people. That's what this bill does. So vote your own conscience and let's get on with business.
Thank you, Senator Jones. Let's see, I have Yee Fisher Schrader as no votes on Senate Bill 1331. Do I have any other no votes on Senate Bill 1331? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 1331 is passed to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Senator Hannon will carry on the Senate side, and Representative Butler will carry on the House side. And with that, we will move to House Bill 2488. Relating to corrections,
for any questions. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2488 came to Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, where it passed out by unanimous vote. House Bill 2488 is a companion bill to H.J.R. 82. It takes effect if H.J.R. 82 is approved by a vote of the people. H.B. 2488 establishes the Oregon Correctional Enterprises as a semi-independent agency. It requires the Director of Corrections to appoint an administrator and create an advisory council to provide policy input. It provides Oregon Correctional Enterprises with the necessary flexibility to run in a more business-like manner and exempts it from legislative or executive branch budgetary control. Funds generated or received by the Oregon Correctional Enterprises will be continuously appropriated, placed in a private bank account, and not commingled with other Department of Corrections funds. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the measure along with its fiscal impact and concluded that no adjustments to the Department of Corrections budget were necessary at this time. The Public Safety Subcommittee concluded that this measure, along with H.J.R. 82, should allow the Department of Corrections to increase compliance with Ballot Measure 17, streamline processing for forming private partnerships, and make inmate work programs more efficient. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Westland. Are there any questions for Representative Westland on House Bill 2488? There seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2488? Right, seeing none, House Bill 2488 is passed to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. House Bill 2637, and relating to motor vehicle emissions testing, Senator Hammond.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members, House Bill 2637 would exempt motor vehicles from emission testing requirements if the vehicle is registered in Columbia or Yanville counties, and if the owner makes a sworn statement that the vehicle is not used to commute to work in the Portland metropolitan area. This bill has been before us several sessions previously. However, language was adopted this time based upon what the governor indicated would like to see contained in this to exempt only those vehicles out that are not traveling into the Portland metropolitan area. So if they were still traveling in the Portland metropolitan area working, they would have to go through the I&M inspections. Otherwise, it'd be another funds reduction, estimated about $282,000 to the Department of Environmental Quality, and it would also reduce their expenditures by an equal amount. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions for Senator Hannon on House Bill 2637? Representative Kitchen.
What does this allow, Senator Hannon? What does this allow as far as anybody going into shop or attend a meeting or something like that?
It doesn't impact them. They can't be commuting on a daily basis or weekly or monthly. They have to sign an affidavit. If it's found that they are, then DMV said that they might have to set up a sticker program or something to enforce it. But that was an unknown issue yet.
Sure. Follow-up. Does that mean when you say a weekly or a monthly that, probably from Millsburg, I average going to Portland more than once a month.
That doesn't matter. You're not working in Portland.
Okay.
On a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
That's what I was trying to determine, then, if somebody lived in this particular area, if they were going weekly to shop or get the groceries once a week.
They'd be exempt.
Okay, so it's not a, it's not just based on a, how many times you do it.
It's if you work in the Portland metropolitan area.
Perhaps I could elaborate on that a little bit. This issue, as you, I know, remember from the previous session, these two had expanded the testing into portions of Yamhill and Columbia County to help Portland meet its emission reduction target. They get emission reduction credits for testing vehicles. And, but they supposedly only count the vehicles that are for commuters, yet they make the people who aren't commuters get tested. And so, we are simply asking to have some of your, vehicle registration, a little checkup on the form, to say that you don't commute. So if you're retired or you, you know, work in Yamhill County or you work in Columbia County and you don't commute, you just have a little checkup on the form to say that you're not a commuter. And that's all that. That's all.
I'm going to be a no on this. It seems like that what we're doing will require changes, and probably the EPA would require that the DEQ that have a program which verifies and enforcing this new status of non-commuting for cars exempted from this testing. The DEQ has no program to determine which drivers commute or don't commute. If this bill does become law, DEQ would have to develop and carry out a new exemption and enforcement program. This would divert DEQ resources from the current clean air programs. It would have to devote scarce resources to this new program. It would exempt certain cars from pollution testing. The new program would do nothing for cleaner air. Not good policy. I think I'll, you know.
Any further questions or comments? Are there any... Senator Stroh is a no vote. Are there other no votes from House Bill 2637?
I'm a courtesy yes vote.
Thank you, Susan. Okay, then. Okay. Senator Stroh is a no vote. House Bill 2637 is passed to the floor to be passed recommendations. Senator Duke will carry on the Senate side. Okay. We will move to House Bill 2808, and I will turn the gavel over to my.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2808 relating to offender registration representative.
Thank you,
Co-Chair
Chairman. House Bill 2808 seeking to waive the names from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law where it passed out by unanimous vote. House Bill 2808 is a companion bill of Senate Bill 740, which has already passed both the House and the Senate. It requires felony sex offenders convicted since January 1, 1972 to register with the Oregon State Police, pay an annual registration fee, and provide change of residence reports. The Public Safety Subcommittee adopted amendments provided by the sponsor of the bill that significantly reduced the fiscal impact. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill and amended it to appropriate $205,335 general fund to the Department of State Police to cover startup costs. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval. And I might mention to colleagues part of a bill, there's actually were two bills that my community asked Senator George and I to introduce on because of a very sad incident that occurred in a little town of Lafayette about a little over a year ago. A young 12-year-old girl was killed by an individual who had a sex offense conviction prior to 1989, which was when Oregon started registering sex offenders. He had subsequent arrests for sex offenses but was not convicted due to whatever circumstances,
And so he was not on a sex offender registration list. So there was no opportunity for the community to know that they had this individual living in the community. And so we are asking to move back the date that convicted sex offenders have to be registered from 1989 back to 1972. That was the date picked by the district attorneys. They said that there was a major change in the codification of laws regarding sex offenses at that point. And that's what House Bill 2808 will do, and I would ask for your approval. Senator Bryan.
Thank you. Lieutenant Lewis.
Thank you. The Judiciary Committees have passed out other bills dealing with the mandatory registration of sex offenders, so this bill and others will certainly stop the notification problems that we've had that occurred in the President Lewis district. My question on this bill, though, deals with the other major felony crimes in their registration. It says manslaughter in all degrees, assault in all degrees, kidnapping and robbery. And is it your intent that if you have a robbery in the second degree or an assault in the second degree that you there have to be registration?
Senator Bryant, that has all been removed from the bill. The amendments, and I don't know what exactly they are, have reduced the bill down to simply changing the date for sex offender registration. And the concept, which was a concept the community wanted, they wanted violent offenders to be registered. We did have to remove that from the bill, largely for fiscal reasons. And so the bill only moved the date for sex offender registration.
Good, because manslaughter in all degrees, you could have a criminally negligent homicide, for instance, and unfortunately we do have those because this involves traffic accidents only. And I don't think we would want to go through the registration process there. Assault in the second degree can be a fight between two individuals that accelerates. Dealing with robbery in the second degree, that's usually without. I'm glad that. Is there an engrossed bill then that removes those categories?
Senator Bryan, there will be one to get to the floor.
Okay.
Those have all been removed.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Bryan. Any further questions, comments? Are there any no votes on House Bill 2808? Hearing none and seeing none, it is passed.
Thank you, Clerk Tim. And we will move now to House Bill 3057 related to crime, Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We bring you House Bill 3057, and the Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, passed out by unanimous vote. It creates the crime of identity theft as a Class C felony and includes it in a group of repeat property offenders. Eligible for increased sentences. The Public Safety Subcommittee adopted the amendments provided by the sponsor of the bill that significantly reduced the fiscal impact. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill and amended it to an appropriate $94,694 to the Department of Corrections to cover additional community corrections supervision costs. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval of this measure.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. Are there any questions for Representative Patrick on House Bill 3057? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3057? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 3057 is passed to the floor with a GPAS recommendation. And we will move now to House Bill 3296.
All right, let's squeeze together here.
I'm putting back the gauge here.
I have
no Senator Yee.
I have 3292.
Senator Yee.
Oh, we're 3292. Excuse me.
I was looking for the age of the
member.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
I mean, Senator Yee, House Bill 3292.
She's the other Oriental on the committee.
Co-chair.
House Bill 3292A requires positive drug test information be entered on the employment driving record, which employers are required under current law to obtain prior to hiring a driver. The bill also requires driver and motor vehicle services to notify the subject of a positive drug test of their right to a hearing. The House Committee on Transportation referred this measure to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. The measure has a potential fiscal impact of $234,149 for additional administrative law judges if an increase in hearing workflow is realized, and $4,200 for driver and motor vehicles to reprogram its computer system. Because the measures specify an operative date of March 1, 2000, no appropriation or limitation is needed at this time. The committee recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Yee on House Bill 3292? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3292? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 3292 is passed in the form of a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 3446, relating to community housing for chronic and mental ill persons. Senator Tucker, thank you.
Okay. House Bill 3446 requires the sale of damaged state hospital property. The net proceeds of the sale will be used to help fund housing for the chronically mentally ill. The bill directs the Department of Corrections to convey the damaged property to the Department of Administrative Services, which is to sell the property for an amount equal to or greater than fair market value. The Department of Administrative Services is to use a licensed real estate broker or organization to facilitate the sale. The sale proceeds, net of expenses, would go to Community Housing Trust Account, part of the Community Mental Health Housing Fund established by the bill. The Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division would use the interest earnings on the account and up to 5% of the proceeds from the sale to develop housing for the ill. The bill directs 70% of the interest earnings to be used for community housing and 30% for institutional housing. None can be used for the division's operations. Up to 10 acres of the damaged property reserved for transfer to the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division to develop community housing. The bill also requires all redevelopment of the damaged property to be consistent with the property's master plan developed by the City of Wilsonville and other interested parties. The bill's fiscal impact is indeterminate. Because the timing of the property sale, interim maintenance costs, the property's sale price, and any related expenses are all unknown, the emergency board may adjust the affected agency's budget if needed during the interim. The Human Resource Subcommittee recommends approval of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Tsitsub. Are there any questions for Senator Tsitsub on House Bill 3446?
I'm sure.
Senator Schroep.
We haven't yet cited prison, and that's one of the sites that's a possibility. How does the sale of this property affect that process? Could somebody explain it?
We actually have cited prison, and the prison is cited as damage. However, my understanding is that through this body, many people in the body have determined damage is not a good threat, and I don't believe the governor believes it's a good threat as well. This bill would sell damage if it is not used for a prison site, and the governor, of course, would, can veto this bill if it turns out that the prison is sited there. But the governor's staff was there when we first started hearing this bill, and then we had our public hearing and really determined that the bill was not in the right shape for us to send it out, and we worked on it, and Mr. Marks was there kind of talking with us about how it could best be implemented, but as we know, it will be the governor's decision whether he uses this. We just set up a procedure and how the money could be used if the damaged property is available.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Any further questions on House Bill 3446? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3446?
I'll be a no.
Okay, Representative Dorn is a no. On House Bill 3446? Okay, House Bill 3446, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Futel will carry the Senate and Representative Locum will carry in House.
Thank you, sir.
That brings us to HJR 82, Senator Hanner.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, members, HJR 82 came to the Ways and Means Committee from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, and it was passed out of that committee by unanimous vote. House Joint Resolution 82 proposes to amend Section 41, Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution. Currently, the Prison Industries Board is consisting of the Governor, Secretary of State, and the State Treasurer. It was determined that it has not worked because these three statewide elected officials have had to designate and spend more time dealing with the policy issues surrounding the prison board. It would place the inmate work programs under the corrections director and giving the director clear authority to designate to others to carry out those policies. Clarifying the inmate work programs are to be designed to benefit the community and support community charitable organizations. Directing the corrections director to avoid development of inmate work activities that reduce pre-existing enterprises or adversely impact programs that employ persons with developmentally disabled. Referring this matter to the voters at their rejection or approval at a special election this November. Public Safety Committee recommends the measure be approved and sent to the voters.
Thank you, Senator Hannon. Are there any questions or comments on HJR 82, Senator Hannon?
Madam Chair.
I guess you can. Go ahead.
First one, is the Department of Corrections comfortable with this solution?
They are, and they've, the three statewide offices, the State Treasurer, Secretary of State, and the Governor's Office, all had representatives representing them at the committee on the bill, and they preferred that the functions be transferred to the Department of Corrections.
The general fund expenditures, $1,205,000, basically go to do what? For the election, right?
This is for the election, and if we have the November election for some other issues as well as this, that will be absorbed proportionately.
Mm-hmm. And so the election would be in November of this year? Right?
Yes. There's a special election, I think, in November.
Thank you.
How will this work, Senator Hanna? I'm reading the sheet here. It requires the Department of Corrections director to avoid prison work programs or nonprofit programs that employ persons with developmental disabilities. And I see, you know, the end that employ persons with developmental disabilities. And I understand that we would want to keep them working. But is there anything else in this bill that? Well, it says avoid prison work programs and compete with private enterprise. How can we possibly run a prison program that isn't going to compete in some way?
Well, if I can make an observation, Representative Mannix from Salem here and myself were appointed on an interim task force consisting of business people, corrections officials, and legislators, and we looked at this issue of prison industry, and what is the role of prison industry. This ballot measure reflects the intention of the legislature to create jobs and to comply with the effects of Measure 17, I believe it was, that voters approved. But it also has the intention of not going in head-to-head competition. As an example, if a laundry service was providing towels and athletic gear to be washed and laundered in Corvallis, and they all of a sudden started shipping the product up at the Oregon State Penitentiary, that certainly is not our intention.
to go in direct competition, but the intention is to make it beneficial to the community, to charitable groups, and to groups that hire disadvantaged people, such as mentally retarded or people who are handicapped with some form of disability. I'm trying to avoid your questions, really.
Madam Chair, I've served in prison industry, and they currently do compete with private enterprise. They do it, for instance, in the Payne area. They do laundry for hospitals and laundry clinics and those sorts of things. They do it in the furniture business. So would those businesses be eliminated if this is passed?
No.
Okay. What would happen?
Representative Mannix is the sponsor of this. When he sponsored Measure 17 that went to the voters to create prison work, there were some flaws in the constitutional provisions. And this is a cleanup of those provisions, and it's an intention to make state law and the state constitution, and probably the state constitution is not the place to have this, so candidly, but I'm designated as a chair, so I'll advocate for it. What question did I answer here?
I think I did,
Senator Metzger. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I've got a couple of observations. Number one is just Senator Bryan said, I do have a clean industry, and my district in Sandy, Mountain Cleaners, has been really seriously impacted by the industries and the setting what they have done. The Republican owner there on a regular basis, and I do understand that concern. One thing about the bill is, refer to that, it does say that to the extent possible, and that the sole decision of whether a program will be used or not is named in the discretion of the corrections director. So the decision is not based in stone, but I do think to the extent possible that if we can keep private business from being impacted, that should be a consideration, even though it's not mandated. But the other thing is, just to echo what Senator Hannon said, I mean, this is a perfect example of things that we don't need in the Constitution. One of the first things you turn to, is prison work program in the Oregon Constitution. And to make any changes, at least valid, we have to now send money and send this to the voters to do this. And this is the type of thing that should have been a statute, and we decide what shouldn't change. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just as a little background, without addressing whether this should or should not be in the Constitution, it certainly is. And when the this issue came up before our subcommittee, both 2488 and HJR 82, which are companion pieces, all the stakeholders involved were very much in favor of both of these pieces of legislation. I mean, the Governor's Office, Department of Correction, and Prison Industries Board all testified that these would help expedite and make the HR or the inmate work program, Valimeter 17, a much more efficient and smoothly running operation. So I would encourage an aye vote on this.
Thank you for allowing me to speak again, Madam Co-Chair. One of the things, just a for instance about competing, and you know that not competing to the extent possible is when Representative Metzger calls up the Director of Corrections and says, I have a constituent here who has a cleaning business and your industry is encroaching upon that and don't do it. That is going to affect what the Director of Corrections does. But the prisons used to also have a dairy farm out here, and I don't know whether they're still running that dairy farm, but do you know they could not provide milk to their own prison because somebody else was providing milk already, and that was going to interfere with the sale of this milk to the state for the prison. Well, I think that I don't want to interfere with other businesses, but this is in our Constitution, and I think it's good that it's in our Constitution, because it's good that prisoners both are not idle and they learn something while they're in prison. Maybe they have never had a job in their life. And with the prison industry, what these folks do is they even learn how to apply for a job because they have to apply to the prison industries that are within the prison. I think it's a very good program, and it might need some changing, but I think that what I see is embodied in this bill are not good changes. It will further inhibit the prison industries from functioning like they ought to actually put prisoners to work. So I will be a no vote.
Are there further questions or comments on HR 82?
Just one final comment. I'm sure they work carefully on this language, but when you say to the extent determined possible, that just invites litigation.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're creating here. I'll go ahead and support this today. I might change my mind on the floor of the Senate, but I hate also to have to spend money to clean up a ballot measure that amended the Constitution a few years ago, and we have to go back and do it again because it's been misinterpreted. So often that's the case, and that, as Senator Metzger said, that's the danger of locking things into the Constitution, doing things this way. But it's $1 million we need to spend for schools or something else.
Yeah.
So, I agree with Senator Cheetah. There doesn't appear that we've actually solved this problem. I think that if we're going to have people work, they need to do gainful work, and they need to have an opportunity to have their products used. And this problem of to the extent possible is all in the eyes of the beholder. And so it just doesn't seem to me that we're putting a new problem in the Constitution rather than solving it. So I'll be joining Senator Cheetah in a no vote.
Are there further no votes on HJR 82, Senator Cho? So I have Senator Cho, Senator Cheetah, Representative Ross, voting no. No? Okay. HJR 82, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with the passed recommendation. Senator Hammond will carry in the Senate, Representative Manis will carry on the House floor.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for the Senator from Welch's. Relative to his last statement, he referenced a good Republican, and I'd like him to finish the sentence. A good Republican is
hard to find.
Beautiful. It's going to be in the weekly Democrat in the movie.
Very good. Let's
Madam Co-Chair, I may reconsider the vote by which you failed to pass House Joint Resolution 35 in our last meeting.
Okay, Butler moves that we reconsider the vote by which we failed to pass HJR 5.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, point of order.
May I finish my statement first and then I'll call on you?
Well, I have a point of order in terms of the motion just made.
Go ahead.
I believe a person has had to have voted on the prevailing side to make the motion to reconsider.
Well, then I will make the motion because I changed my vote to no to him.
That's fine.
Because I didn't want to. Then I will make the motion that we reconsider the vote on HJR 35. Okay. So first we will vote on the motion to reconsider, and then if that motion is approved, the bill will be back before it. So let's, I guess, have a who's going to vote no on the motion to reconsider HJR 35. No
vote? No. Oh, why don't you call the roll?
Well, that's your roll call.
Representative Ross? No. Westland?
Aye.
Netherly?
Aye.
Leonard?
No.
Schrader?
No.
Butler?
Aye.
Menace?
Aye.
Attridge?
No.
Lewis?
Aye.
Senator Cheetah?
Aye. Senator Hannon?
No.
Yee?
Aye.
Pro?
No.
Ryan?
No.
Arioli?
Aye.
Fisher?
Aye.
Metzger?
No.
Co-Chair Kim?
Aye.
Okay, HR 35 is back before.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. HGR 35, we discussed last week, it does propose amendment to the Constitution to place limits on general fund appropriations. This proposed amendment would limit the increase or decrease of biennial general fund appropriations to the rate of increase or decrease in Oregon private sector personal income. Your general government subcommittee amended the measure to do four things. Number one, we include an emergency clause. And number two, if passed by the voters, the appropriation limitation can be exceeded by the legislative assembly with a two-thirds majority vote of all members on both sides, both houses. And it further clarifies the proposed constitutional amendment applies to the aggregate appropriations as opposed to line-by-line, program-by-program appropriations. The amendment also reduces the potential fiscal impact by allowing the measure to be placed before the voters in the next regular biennial primary election in the event that there is no special election this November. And the General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of House Senate Resolution 35.
Thank you, Mr. President. Are there questions or comments from the
I just, you know, we debated this before, and this is my opinion, for what it's worth, which is probably not much, but for what it's worth, that this is a straitjacket that's really going to interfere with a lot of things in the state, including the bond rating.
Thank you, Senator Cho. Treasurer
Minor. I stated before, the Treasurer's Office testified in the General Government Subcommittee, of which I sit as a member. Which threatens the state's credit rating. I'll quote Ray Murphy of Moody's Investment Services. There is a strong concern about Oregon's ability to maintain its credit rating because of the restrictions placed upon the state's ability to address its fiscal responsibility in years of declining revenue. The bill limits Oregon's ability to prepare itself in good years to sustain itself in bad years. Fortunately, Ray Murphy doesn't have a bill before the Oregon legislature that can be killed because he said that, although the Treasurer's Office has. But that is his position, that's his statement, and I think that should be good enough for us to kill this bill again.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further questions or comments?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I won't go into the details since we've done this before, and I've heard how the process works when things come back. So I would say, again, this is very poor public policy. And I think our responsibility for being in these seats, I think we have to look at very carefully on a vote like this and the people who will be sitting here after we're gone. Thank you.
Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, I think that being fiscally responsible is wrong and it affects bond ratings. Bonds probably weren't properly thought out in the first place. And I think might provide just for maybe a little benefit to some of the people in the future that have been so happy to increase the bond obligation they've had in the past, especially when we had considerable added income, and that hasn't been enough to satisfy a greedy appetite. So I support this.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Tika.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I want to remind the committee members that this is basically already in the statute, and we operate on this. And I would remind you of the vote that went out to the people in May of 1980 regarding the results of having a 2% kicker. It was 636,565 yes votes, 64,979 no votes. Basically, what we're doing here is just think of your own budget, your own household budget. You determine your household budget based upon what you bring in, what you earn. A state
doesn't have earnings, a state garners money from the tax-paying people of the state. That is how they get their income. What this measure does is decide what will be taken from the taxpayers by what those taxpayers have made, the private sector income. Therefore, we'll be able to determine what is really equitable for the state to be collecting from its constituents. When somebody goes to buy a house, your income is considered on how much you can make your payments for. So it doesn't surprise me if we get in debt ourselves more than we ought to, then maybe our bond rating should be affected. It's just like applying for credit. We'll be good for it if we spend prudently. What this measure does is helps the state of Oregon to determine what we should be collecting from the taxpayers of the state. It will be based upon their personal income, so we won't be over-collecting from individuals in the state. Madam
Postal?
I don't want to quibble. I think we've stated our positions, and I don't want to restate mine. I do want to remind us that vote that was after the 1979 reforms that included the kicker was a vote on a whole package of things, including property tax relief and other kinds of things, which was generally well approved, but it was a whole package vote. Almost everything in the package except the kicker has been repealed by this legislature over time.
Yeah,
this doesn't limit how much we collect. I mean, that's not accurate. We may get some back as a result of this, but it doesn't limit collections at all. We just can't spend it. And I'd also point out to the committee and to the public that we in Oregon have a great advantage over many states already, where we already are required to balance the budget. So as long as we're able to balance the budget, that's nine times better than any other state in the union here. We're much more fiscally responsible as we speak. To collect money and then not be able to spend it for the good of the taxpayers. I think a lot of us forget that we are not some august parliamentary or aristocratic body. We are the representatives of the people. This is their government. All the money that's coming in is their money. I mean, I always am amused when I hear a statement that only a certain amount of the money that we collect is their money. It's all their money. So we have a balanced budget, and we balance that budget appropriately, and the taxpayers give us the money that they feel is appropriate. It's our job to figure out where to spend it and how to spend it along the lines of what they want, what they desire. That's our sole function for being here, despite all the little fun games everyone likes to play. That's our function. I think this is not needed. It's an extraneous bill that just places obscure limitations that don't get us any further down the road to good government of loyal people.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I appreciate the acknowledgement that these are taxpayer funds and they are sacred. And I think we all take our responsibilities in ways and means with that degree of sacredness kept in mind. But I would like to also indicate that there was information given to us just this past week that relative to bond ratings and relative to ratings on some of those instruments, debt instruments that we pay in the state, what we do when we fall short of meeting the higher interest or higher level of debt rating, that we can buy insurance on those bonds to increase that rating as well. And this has been the practice with the certificates of participation in the past. And if debt rating is what we're looking for, it appears that there may be a vehicle already, which we are already employing within the state, which will help increase that rating by buying that additional level of insurance. And so I'm having a very difficult time buying the issue that is on our bond rating goal.
Are there comments? Yes, I'd like to briefly comment. We do have a spending limit currently in the statute, and it's been a subject of some disagreement this year because the Republicans want to hold very firmly to that spending limit. And I think that responsibility is extremely important. Yes, we do have to balance a budget, but you can balance a budget that is too large and create a significant roll-up for the next biennium
which will cause you have to go to the voters and increase their taxes. And I believe that that is irresponsible, even though you balance the budget. That's why I believe so strongly in a spending limit. And because we cannot simply control ourselves as a legislature in not wanting to tinker with the existing spending limit, which is in the statute, and it is part of that package that was passed in 1980 by a 10-to-1 margin by the voters, it is not repealed, just as the kicker is not repealed. But once again, the legislature constantly wants to tinker both with the kicker and with the spending limit. And I believe for that reason that it is prudent for us to put the spending limit in the Constitution. There is a bypass provision. Two-thirds of the legislature believes that they need to break the spending limit because of some kind of, something that happens at the ballot box with an initiative or whatever might happen. It is a high bar, two-thirds, but I think we should take these things very seriously. So I believe that this is the prudent and fiscally responsible thing to do, and would urge you to aye vote.
I guess I wasn't going to speak on this, but it's not a high bar, it's an impossible bar. I've been here 25 years, and I have yet to see the first two-thirds vote of anything out of this legislature on any issue. They get 30 votes on a non-controversial issue. The spending limitation, I can assure you, is going to be controversial. And I think it behooves us to look and see what we're really doing. I was one of the original no votes on the kicker. And I still remember voting against it in 1979. And I indicated to some of my colleagues that they were going to live to rue the day that they passed it, from the standpoint that they were limiting themselves. And in 1981 to 1983, we had 7 special sessions plus the regular session to cut budgets. And 2 times during that period, we used the kicker to balance the budget. I think to put this in the Constitution is just locking away again one more option. It's already in the statute, already exists in the law books, and if we lack the wherewithal to follow what the existing law is, then entrusting it to the voters isn't going to make it that much better. Because what we're saying is we don't trust ourselves. And the public doesn't have the knowledge of all the complicated issues that go into balancing a budget. It's not a put down on people, but they simply are not in this building day in and day out and have a complete understanding or knowledge of what the budget process is. Even some members in this building don't have that grasp. So, it troubles me that we're locking this away in the Constitution. There's some other things that we're locking away. I understand the political aspects of it, but quite frankly, personally, I feel it's, there's 34 measures going to the voters this year. Pretty soon my constituents are going to say, why hire you to be our elected senator? We get to vote on everything.
Right.
Because you're afraid to make a decision. I'm not afraid to make a decision. The expenditure limitation's there. Let's keep it in the statutes, but let's not refer it to the voters.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, any further comments on H.R. 35? During this thing, now let's have a roll call vote.
Senator Gross?
No.
Westland?
Aye.
Messerly?
Aye.
Leonard?
No.
Schrader?
No.
Butler?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Attridge?
No.
Senator Lewis?
Aye.
Senator Futa?
Aye.
Cannon?
No.
Yee?
Aye.
Crow?
No.
Bryant?
No.
Arioli?
Aye.
Fisher?
Aye.
Metzger?
No.
Wheelchair Timms?
Aye.
Okay, HDR 35, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Parker will carry in the House, and Mr. Ray O'Leary will carry in the Senate.
Okay, we have a little bit more business to complete here. Representing Ross, a federal grant application for Department of Human Resources Health Division.
Human Resources Subcommittee recommends the Joint Legislative Committee on Ways and Means approve the submission of an application to the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for a grant called Reducing the Burden of Asthma. This grant would provide funds to form an advisory group that would select data and develop a document outlining the size and members of the population affected by asthma, their quality of life, disability, and activity limitations, their use of health care resources, and environmental causes of asthma. The group would consist of epidemiologists and representatives from the Health Division, the Office of Medical Assistance, and other related organizations. This would be a three-year grant with a budget of about $200,000 per year. There is no state match required. If the grant is awarded, the department will return to the Emergency Board for expenditure limitation and physician authority. The Human Resources Subcommittee recommends your approval of this request.
Thank you very much, Representative Ross. Are there any questions for Representative Ross on this grant application regarding asthma? Okay, are there any objections to the approval of this grant application? Hearing seeing none, it is still approved. Co-Chair Tim, we have before us conflict amendments for Senate Bill 1127, House Bill 3596, if you would like to make the motion to adopt the conflict amendment.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the conflict amendment on Senate Bill 1127 and House Bill 3596.
Okay. Senator Co-Chair Kim has moved the conflict amendment to Senate Bill 1127 and House Bill 3596. Are there any questions or comments?
That's a lot.
Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to adoption of the conflict amendment? Hearing and seeing none, the conflict amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1127 and House Bill 3596 out of the full committee with a recommendation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Kim. Move Senate Bill 1127 and House Bill 3596 as amended by the conflict amendment to the floor.
Can you hear my new resolution?
Pass recommendation. Are there any no votes? Hearing and seeing none, and the before everybody rests off this morning, we will be running our subcommittees. It's going to be difficult with the floor, but all three of our morning subs are going to meet, I believe. So please go directly to your subcommittee meetings. We'll try to get members excused from the floor. And a couple other announcements. Most of you know we will be running Ways and Means all day tomorrow. Our morning subs will meet at 9 a.m. Our afternoon subs will meet at 1 p.m. And so I would hope that all of you can be there in chambers. And then on Sunday, we have a full committee meeting Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. And we will also have another full committee meeting on Monday afternoon. I don't know the time yet. But we do hope to complete the work for Ways and Means with the past exception of the emergency fund bill. We may leave that to later, but we hope to have all the budgets out Sunday and Monday. Yeah. Senator Fisher,
hold Ben up long enough.
Oh, okay. All right.
Madam Chair. Hold up.
One more announcement. The package that you get, obviously we've been trying to get this out the night before a full committee. That will not be possible for the Sunday full committee or the Monday full committee. The package should be delivered to your office an hour before committee. So approximately 2 p.m. Sunday afternoon, we will get the package for full day's meeting. And that's all my answers.
Madam Chair, the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee will meet right now in our regular hearing room.
Okay. And education. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.